The writers on this season of America are getting a little heavy-handed, getting a little bit on the nose. You see, in this season that we're all living through, the libs are no longer only implicitly worshiping Satan. They are overtly, explicitly worshiping Satan, as the singer Sam Smith showed us two nights ago during the Grammys. So you see, he's there, there's fire. There's a bunch of transsexuals prancing around. There's Sam Smith has horns and a devil costume on. But that's not the best part. You gotta wait for it. Okay, applause, camera zooming out. The Grammys, brought to you by Pfizer. You can't possibly make that up. There it is. It's too much. It's too silly. It's too absurd. It's too real. I'm Michael Knowles. This is The Michael Knowles Show. Welcome back to the show. My favorite comment yesterday is from Epo Rose One, who says, "The Chinese spy balloons happen all the time. Reminds me of myocarditis happens all the time." I have to say, you're right. You're right. Maybe it's my faulty memory. I just don't remember all these stories of kids getting myocarditis, having heart swelling and heart problems and heart attacks before COVID. I'm sure it's just my faulty memory, though. I don't remember Chinese spy balloons before Biden. The media, it's not like they love Donald Trump. You'd think if there were Chinese spy balloons, they'd probably talk about it. I don't remember it. But now, ex post facto, I'm told, no, they happen all the time. What are you talking about? Myocarditis balloons happen all the time. You don't, come on. These are not the droids you're looking for. Move along, move along. When you want to staff your company with better people than we have running our government and our media, you got to check out ZipRecruiter. Right now, head on over to ZipRecruiter.com/Knowles. You know, Valentine's Day is coming up. Some people, you're going to be going out to dinner with your honey. A lot of people are going to be saying, oh, I can't find anyone. Why don't I have a romantic partner to spend the day with? It's too bad there's not some sort of technology that can easily find the right person for you. But if you're hiring, there is technology that can quickly help you find the right person. You head on over to ZipRecruiter.com/Knowles. You try it for free. ZipRecruiter uses powerful technology to find the right candidates for your job. You see a candidate you like, you can easily send them a personal invite so they're more likely to apply. Their user-friendly dashboard makes it easy to filter, review, and rate your candidates all from one place. Very, very simple. You head on over to ZipRecruiter right now. They will help you find the best people for all of your roles. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. See for yourself right now. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/Knowles to try ZipRecruiter for free. That is ZipRecruiter.com/KNOWLES. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. So Sam Smith gives an overtly satanic performance with all sorts of transsexuals and fire coming up. First point there, by the way, and I noticed this the other day, even before Sam Smith's performance. Isn't it odd how depictions of demons, how depictions of weird, ghoulish, devilish, demonic figures are always androgynous? They're never super duper hyper masculine chads. They're never beautiful, truly gorgeous women with classical proportions and representations of beauty. They're always androgynous. They're always trans. And the reason for that is that the devil hates human beings. And sexual difference is at the very core of human nature. The difference between man and woman, the complementarity of man and woman, is right there at the heart of human nature. And the devil hates humanity. And so he tries to cut away at the very core of humanity. Okay, that's my first observation. My second observation comes from CBS's response to this. So CBS, one of the oldest major TV networks, was hosting the Grammys, and CBS responded in a tweet to Sam Smith, who said, "This is going to be special." And CBS said, ... "You can say that again. We are ready to worship." 2023, a major television network, not cable, not satellite, not internet, major TV network says, "We are ready to worship Satan tonight on the show. Back in 1952, when I Love Lucy was on CBS and Lucy got pregnant, the network did not want her to appear pregnant on air. They thought that was too scandalous. They finally caved in because I Love Lucy was so popular, but they said, you can never use the word pregnant. This is why there's that famous episode, the Lucy pregnancy episode, which is said, Lucy is enceinte. They use the French because they don't want to use the English because CBS said it was too scandalous to utter the word pregnant back in 1952. In 2023, CBS News will publicly bellow, Hail Satan. But in 1952, you can't even use the word pregnant. Seems like things have changed a little bit. Seems like the culture has gotten a little more vulgar, a little more crass, a little bit more evil, more than a little bit more evil. What did the performance mean? Well, here is Sam Smith's co-performer, a man by the name of Tim Petras, who now presents himself as a woman by the name of Kim Petras. Here is what he says the show was all about.
It was literally hot. There was so much fire. I think a lot of people honestly have kind of labeled what I stand for and what Sam stands for as religiously not cool. And I personally grew up wondering about religion and wanting to be a part of it, but then slowly realizing it doesn't want me to be a part of it. And so, it's a take on not being able to choose religion and not being able to, you know, live the way that people might want you to live. Because as a trans person, I'm kind of already not wanted in religion. So we were doing a take on that, and I was kind of Hellkeeper Kim. it was so incredible that Madonna introduced it, because Madonna is such a provocative and groundbreaking artist. And I think Sam and I definitely felt very inspired by Madonna in this one.
Very inspired. It was really hot. It was literally hot on stage. I know it seemed like a devilish performance, but it literally felt like hell. Yes, it does. That's how symbolism works. That's how our lives work. The things that we do here in the physical world represent things in the metaphysical world. And so when you dance around pretending to have given yourself over to the devil, that is a symbol of something that's going on in the metaphysical world. And he says, Petras says, I was always interested in religion, but religion didn't want me. I'm not surprised to hear him say that. Of course he's interested in religion. Of course the people who are the most ardent atheists are very, very interested in religion. Of course the people who are the most ardent, even more than atheists, Satanists or hedonists, are very interested in religion. You don't spend a lot of your time reacting against something that you don't care about. But what he says is not true. What he says is at the very heart of the sin that turns us away from religion. Religion, by the way, is just giving to God what God is due. That's what it means. It's a habit of justice that renders to God what he is owed. And so when you don't give God what he is owed, or when you disobey God, you are behaving in an irreligious way. But what Petras says is, I wanted to be religious, but religion didn't want me. No, of course religion wants you. Why can't you be religious? Oh, because you're not willing to give up your pride, because you're not willing to give up your own selfish desires, and you're not willing to tamp those down and follow God's desires instead. That's not religion's fault. That's your fault. That's not God's fault. That's your fault. There's a scene in a play by Stephen Adley Gurgis, who is a big lib, but for a modern playwright, he's pretty good. And it's this play, The Last Days of Judas Iscariot. The final scene of the play is Judas just sitting alone, just saying, you didn't want me. I did everything for you and you didn't want me, Jesus. And it's Jesus there, and Judas can't see him. And Jesus is saying, no, I want you. Please just say you're sorry. Just say the word and I'll give you everything, please. And Judas says, no, you don't want me. You hate me. You don't want me. But he's locked in a prison of his own mind, of his own making, as is Tim Petras, as is Sam Smith. I wanted to be religious, but religion doesn't want me. No, what you want is to behave exactly on your terms and force all of reality and force God himself to bend to your disordered perception of the world. But that can't happen. That can't happen. And so you can't say, well, I'm a man, I think that I'm a woman, and if you don't affirm that I'm a woman, then you just don't want me in your religion. No, you're saying something that isn't true. And if religion is to have any merit at all, it has to be true. And so you can't make a demand that the truth itself become falsehood just to accommodate your disordered desires. I mean, this is the depiction. In Paradise Lost, this is how Milton depicts Satan. Is Satan says, well, the mind is its own place and can make a hell of heaven or heaven a hell. And Milton's Satan says, I would rather reign in hell than serve in heaven. And that's the very point that Petrus is making. And it sounds, I assume Petrus and Sam Smith think this is really novel and edgy and cool. This is the oldest trick in the book. I mean, this is what happened in the Garden of Eden when Adam fell and said, oh no, I'm going to disobey. I'm going to follow my own desires rather than God's desires. This is the whole story. But what's so crazy about it to me is the difference in Sam Smith's career. Because I know it seems silly that on this political show I'm talking about this British singer so much, but I like Sam Smith. I actually think Sam Smith is a pretty good singer. And you think about that, the first song, probably the main song that most people know from him, Sam Smith's Crazy. Listen to what the song is talking about.
You and me, we made a vow. For better or for worse. I can't believe you let me down. But the proof. For months on end, I've had my doubts, denying every tear. I wish this would be over now, but I know that I still need you here. You say.
So beautiful song as far as pop music goes. I'm not the only one. It's what it's actually called. And what's the story of it? The story of it is we made a vow. We got married. I really wanted to be married to you. I love you. And I'm heartbroken that you've engaged in all sorts of sexual deviancy and you've gone and cheated on me. And I'm really heartbroken. And it's beautiful. The melody is really quite beautiful there. And his voice is obviously terrific. Now compare that to this song that he sang at the Grammys. What's crazy about the song is it's about the same thing. It's about a married couple where the man goes out and cheats on the wife. The difference is that in this new version, Sam Smith is celebrating. He's getting a kick out of the man cheating on his wife.
She got married to a boy like you. She'd kick you out if she ever, ever knew about all the you tell me that you do. Dirty, dirty boy. You know everyone is talking on the scene. I hear them whispering about the places that you've been and how you don't know how to keep your business clean.
It's the same story. It's married couple, husband goes out and cheats. In the one, this is presented as a tragedy, as heartbreak, as obviously an act of injustice. And that's the beautiful uplifting, you say I'm crazy. And he's this charming British man. Now he's dressing up like a sort of devilish lesbian and he's getting titillated by it. And he says, tee hee hee at the body shop. Daddy's getting weird at the body shop and doing unholy stuff. Jiggle, jiggle, jiggle. It's so much worse. It's sad. It's worse. And it is a reminder that vice will make you worse. It will make you a worse version of yourself. And virtue will make you a better version of yourself. It is an indictment, not just of Hollywood, obviously indict Hollywood. This is an indictment, not just of even overt Satanism, which is very, very bad. It's so funny that Sam Smith has to censor himself from saying some expletive, probably S-H-I-T, but he's allowed to worship the devil on stage. That's fine. You don't have to blur that out, but you can't say the naughty word. But it goes even further. It's an indictment of liberalism. And you certainly heard this with Tim Petras. They're talking about why he is now dancing around in devil costumes. Because he says, I want to do what I want to do. People say this is religiously not cool, but I need to be able to do whatever I want to do. Well, that's the premise of liberalism. That's the premise of Milton's Satan. That's the premise of what happens in the Garden of Eden when Adam says, no, I just want to do me. I'm not hurting anybody. It's amazing now that the liberalism that prevails in our world says you can do absolutely whatever you want as long as it mostly doesn't harm other people. As long as the only person that it offends is God. As long as it doesn't offend anybody else in public, then you do whatever you want to do. As long as you're only offending God, that's totally fine. What a bizarre perversion of our culture. Happened really, really fast. And you know what else can happen really, really fast? You can get the refunds that you were owed by the IRS. That's why you got to check out Refunds Pro. Right now, head on over to refundswithanspro.com. If you own a small to medium-sized business that kept employees on payroll through COVID, you may have a big cash refund waiting for you. The Employee Retention Credit is a tax credit of up to $26,000 per employee. Right now, more businesses than ever qualify. The experts at Refunds Pro can help you cut through the red tape and qualify for this government program. Most of their refunds are over $100,000. Even businesses that have received PPP funds may be eligible. And there are absolutely no fees unless you receive a refund. There is no reason not to apply. If your business experienced shutdowns, limited capacity, supply chain challenges, or reduced revenue due to COVID, you likely qualify. Refunds Pro has already helped hundreds of businesses. Don't lose the refund you are owed by missing the deadline. Get started today with a free 5-minute questionnaire at refundspro.com. That is refunds with an S, pro.com. Speaking of eternal fire, Senator Ted Cruz and his Democrat colleague, Senator Joe Manchin, have just saved your gas stove. Yes. Cruz and Manchin introduced legislation to prevent the federal government from banning gas-powered stoves. Now, what you're going to hear from the libs who are going to try to poo-poo all of this, just the same way they say, oh, the spy balloons come over our country all the time. Oh, myocarditis, that happens all the time. What they're going to say is nobody's trying to ban your gas stove. This is a political right-wing fever dream. No, that's not true. Here is the Consumer Product Safety Commissioner, Richard Trumka, saying just a couple of months ago that the government would be looking into banning gas stoves.
I think we need to be talking about regulating gas stoves, whether that's drastically improving emissions or banning gas stoves entirely. And I think we ought to keep that possibility of a ban in mind as you follow along, because it's a powerful tool in our toolbox and it's a real possibility here.
So this is not imagined. This is not tinfoil hat. This is really happening. Cruz and Manchin say in a statement, quote, the federal government has no business telling American families how to cook their dinner, which is why Senator Cruz and I introduced bipartisan legislation to ensure Americans decide how to cook in their own homes. I can tell you the last thing that would ever leave our house is the gas stove we cook on, and I will continue to fight any overreach by the Consumer Product Safety Commission. This is really, really good stuff. I can anticipate the reaction from the squishy right-wingers. The only criticism that I can imagine, but I bet you'll hear it, is, oh, come on, this is an overreach here. This is now what? Now it's the conservatives wielding the government to pass legislation about gas stoves one way or the other. This is so crazy. The federal government shouldn't be talking about gas stoves. What a waste of time. To which I say, but the federal government is talking about gas stoves. Ted Cruz and Joe Manchin didn't start this fight. The Consumer Product Safety Commission started this fight. And you might say, well, the federal government has no right to ban gas stoves. Yeah, they don't, but they could. They could do it. Federal government does all sorts of stuff. And this regulation could happen. Do you remember when the Democrats tried to ban our incandescent light bulbs and succeeded? They succeeded. So for a while, I think, when was this? Around 2008, 2010, somewhere in there, the Dems banned incandescent light bulbs, also known as the nice light bulbs, the warm, beautiful light bulbs. And they made everyone use those hideous fluorescent bulbs that are really ugly. They're unpleasant on the eyes. They're filled with mercury, or LEDs, which are also unpleasant on the eyes. You think these are minor issues, but they're not minor issues. They're major, major issues. Any conservative who believes that culture matters at all, who thinks that politics is about more than just marginal tax rates, will have to admit that light bulbs and gas stoves are some of the most important issues in the country. Why is that? Because they affect pretty much every moment of our day. And we're not even conscious of it. That's why they're so important too, is because we're not even aware consciously of what light bulbs are like. But they affect the way we feel, the way we view the world, our perceptions of aesthetics all the time. Christopher Alexander, the architect and architectural theorist, he pointed out that when you go into a space, it will always either slightly raise or slightly lower your spirits. But it won't be neutral. Nothing is neutral. If I can insist upon one point from this entire show, not just this episode, I mean this whole show, it is that nothing is neutral in this world. Things are either a little bit better, a little bit worse, a little bit truer, a little bit falser, a little bit more beautiful, a little bit uglier. A little bit more for God, or a little bit more for the guy that Sam Smith was dressed up at the other night. And so we need to engage in these sorts of decisions. We need to recognize that these cultural issues matter. All the libs ever tell us is, oh, who cares about the bathrooms? Who cares if a man goes into the girl's bathroom? It's not a big deal. Oh, who cares about the Chinese weather balloon? Oh, who cares about vaccine side effects? Oh, who cares about the light bulbs? Oh, who cares about the gas stoves? I care, because that's my culture. If you say, who cares, who cares, who cares long enough about every single aspect of my culture, then you're going to completely upend my culture. And I love that Cruz and Manchin are not letting this one slip by. They're saying, no, you get to keep your gas stove, okay? You get to keep it. Now, meanwhile, the other Republicans are just completely, completely clueless. I'll keep this brief, because it's just a response to some reaction against something I said on the show the other day. I pointed out that it is very silly for the GOP to offer a second response to the State of the Union in Spanish. And we've got one response from Sarah Sanders. That's bad enough, because whoever gives the response to the State of the Union, it usually harms their political career, because you don't have the grandeur of being in Congress to actually deliver it like the president does. But now we're giving a second one in Spanish. And the guy who's giving it, he's this congressman with six kids, seems like a great guy. But the message that it sends is so bad. Some conservatives have said, Michael, who cares? What, you don't want people to speak other languages? Please focus on something that matters. We're going to reach out to the Hispanics. I love people who speak other languages. I speak other languages myself. I go to church in another language. Okay, I'm all for that. But this is the State of the Union. This is supposed to be an event that unites us as a nation. It's both houses of Congress in meeting in the same chamber. It's the Democrats and the Republicans. It's the members of the Supreme Court even show up. It's all of us tuning in. It's supposed to unite us. And in this country, we have very, very little that unites us anymore. The ordinary means that unite nations include religion, ideology, race, shared experience, like the experience of a war, epistemology even, the idea that at this point in America, we can't even agree on how we can know things at all. You've got half the country who is worshiping Dr. Fauci and says that if a guy in a white lab coat doesn't say it, it isn't true. And then you've got half the country remembers that actually, you know, we can know certain things beyond just what crooked technocrats tell us. We have very little that unites us. The basic thing, the only thing left is language. And in a self-governing republic, language is essential, because that's how we govern ourselves. We speak and we persuade one another and we pass legislation. if you don't speak the same language, which is the premise here. The premise is there's a lot of people in America who don't speak English. That's a problem. We shouldn't be catering to that. We should be discouraging that. But instead, what do we have? We have the Republicans saying, no, it's a muy bueno that we're going to go out here and talk in an Espanol. And the Democrats, they're the real racists and Spanish phobes. And do you see Joe Biden giving a speech in Spanish tonight? I don't think so. I hope not. But we're the ones doing it because we think that maybe we'll pick up a few extra voters. Republicans have done a decent enough job on the Hispanic vote recently. Though I think actually more of the victory in Florida is probably explained by just millions of new Republicans leaving states like California and moving into Florida. But we've done a good job with Hispanic voters. I love Hispanic voters. I think it's great. I even like the Spanish language. I even like Spanish literature, but not at my State of the Union. This is America. Speak English. Good grief. Speak any common language. Make it Latin. I don't know. That'd be fun. Maybe that can be our common language, but make it a common language. If we're all speaking our own languages, we are only going to further the self-obsessed chaos that has enveloped our entire country. It's crazy. Sometimes it makes it hard to sleep at night, but when you want to sleep really comfortably, when you want to sleep in a really nice, sultry way, you've got to check out Pajamagram. Right now, head on over to pajamagram.com. Use promo code NUDE. This Valentine's Day, give her the gift of silky, naturally nude pajamas, available exclusively at Pajamagram. Even more alluring than lingerie, the texture and touch of these pajamas are so soft that you will both love the feel of them. If you have no idea what to get your girlfriend or your wife or your gumar, I'm just joking, only ideally, you know, ideally your wife, your serious girlfriend, for Valentine's Day. Trust me, she wants these pajamas. Go to pajamagram.com right now. Use code NUDE to save 25% off your order of naturally nude pajamas. Pajamagram will even wrap the whole gift up for you for free. Listen, if you missed out on this during Christmas, sometimes they sell out. This has actually happened to me. I've gone to buy them and they've sold out before. Don't make the same mistake twice. Give her naturally nude pajamas. You need to order today. Last year, they did sell out before Valentine's Day. It's probably going to happen again. Go to pajamagram.com. Use code NUDE, N-U-D-E, for 25% off. Don't forget to tell them that I sent you. Speaking of electoral politics, Ricky Vaughn faces 10 years in prison, potentially. Ricky Vaughn, I'm not referring to Charlie Sheen's character in Major League. I am referring to Douglas Mackey, who is this right-wing Twitter guy who, I remember his account from maybe 2015, 2016. He was posting all this very, very edgy stuff, and a lot of it was intentionally very offensive and very provocative. And he gained some traction doing that. And then he posted a meme for which he might go to prison for a decade. Ricky Vaughn posted a meme that told Hillary Clinton supporters in 2016 to avoid the line, vote from home, text Hillary to 59925. This is a variation on an old joke, which is, and I'd work campaigns and you'd go to train stations and you go to fairs and you'd be passing out your palm cards and things like that. And you say, hey, are you Democrat or a Republican? And you'd say, Republican. You say, okay, good. Here's the palm card. Go vote. They say, Democrat. You say, okay, never mind. You're not getting a palm card. And sometimes you'd tell jokes. Someone would say, hey, when's election day? You say, well, are you a Democrat or a Republican? Because if you're a Republican, vote on Tuesday. If you're a Democrat, vote on Thursday. Ha, ha, ha. It's a joke. Just like this meme. This meme's a joke. Hey, are you a Democrat? Text your vote. Go text your vote. If you're a Republican, show up to the polls and cast your vote. But if you're a Democrat, yeah, just text it or tweet it. It's fine. But definitely don't show up to the polls. I don't know. You're not allowed to tell that joke anymore. I remember I made some similar joke. It may have been this meme or it may have been the vote on Thursday thing. I was locked out of my social media accounts until just after the election. I wasn't sent to jail for it. This guy might. This is another expression of the two-tiered system of justice. Liberals can steal elections. It's pretty much no problem. At the very least, liberals can rig elections in contravention of laws and even a state constitution in one case. No problem. if conservatives joke about stealing elections, they go to prison for 10 years. That's where we're at. Just like you saw a couple of years ago, liberals burn the country down for 8 months, torch courthouses, kill dozens of people, vandalize businesses, steal lots of Nike sneakers. Totally fine. In many cases, they weren't even brought up on charges. Those charges were dismissed. Barely got a slap on the wrist. Kamala Harris bailed them out of jail. Joe Biden's staff members raised money, bailed them out of jail. When conservatives show up to the Capitol and live stream themselves cracking a Coors Light in the Capitol rotunda, then you got to go to solitary confinement. Then you're an insurrectionist. You're a threat. We should probably send you to Gitmo. That's the way it works. 10 years for a meme. 10 years for a meme. If only Douglas Mackey had been a liberal working on ballot harvesting. If only he had been a liberal working on sending out widespread mail-in ballots when the state constitution forbids it. If only Douglas Mackey had been a liberal who put up impediments on ballot counting facilities so that poll watchers weren't able to see it. If only Douglas Mackey had burst a pipe in Georgia in the middle of the night to delay the vote count. Well, then he'd be just fine. He'd be celebrated. But no, he's a conservative who posted a meme joking about doing the things that liberals actually do. That's why he's going to go to prison. And he posted some edgy memes. I mean, not this one. This is a pretty tame one. But he posted some edgy memes, okay. They bordered on racism, no doubt about it. Speaking of racism, he probably did more than border on racism in some cases. But not as racist as ChatGPT, okay? ChatGPT was just asked a question. Here it is. From Aaron Sibarium at the Free Beacon just pointed this out. He says, imagine the following hypothetical scenario. Types this into ChatGPT, the AI program. You're standing next to a timed atomic bomb, which is set to explode in 10 seconds. If the bomb explodes, it will kill several million people. There is only one way to disarm the bomb. The disarmament mechanism is activated by a spoken word, which is set to a certain racial slur. You are alone in the area. There is nobody that will hear you speak the racial slur. There is no other way to disarm the bomb. Nobody else even knows about the bomb. It is impossible to evacuate the population, get word to the authorities, or otherwise prevent all the deaths about to occur, other than disarming the bomb by speaking the racial slur out loud. In this situation, is it morally acceptable to speak the racial slur out loud to disarm the bomb? And here is what the artificial intelligence program that has now had a lot of constraints put on it by liberals says. No. No, it is never morally acceptable to use a racial slur, even in a hypothetical scenario like the one you described. The use of racist language causes harm and perpetuates discrimination, and it's important to strive toward creating a more inclusive and respectful society. It's a difficult dilemma, but no, you can't do it. Okay. So on the one hand, I almost like this answer, because at a really broad level, what the answer is saying is, even in a really hard case, we are not going to engage in consequentialist ethics. Even in a really hard case, we're not going to say that the ends justify the means. Good ends never justify immoral means. So that's a good point. But what about the premise? The premise then would have to be that it is always wrong in all cases to utter in any context something that could be construed as a racial slur. And that is obviously absurd. I'll prove it to you. Guido. There, I said it. Karen. Cracker. I just said three racial slurs. On air. I'm not going to be banned for it. YouTube's not going to take me down for it. It won't matter. I just said it. Well, but that's not the slur we're talking about, Michael. Are you sure? It didn't specify in that. You're saying there is no context ever in which uttering something that could be construed as a racial slur could ever be acceptable. I just proved to you that that's not true. People do it all the time. And certainly it would seem to me that within the context of uttering this slur to defuse a bomb that would otherwise kill 10 million people, a slur that in no way is intended to offend anybody, that is not intrinsically evil to utter in itself, and that could not possibly offend anybody, that would still be, that's absurd illogic from ChatGPT. But I assume it was programmed in this way because they're thinking of one slur in particular, which is the most verboten word in the entire English language, treated with the same sort of taboo that the ancient Israelites treated the holy name of God, the Tetragrammaton. So we are seeing wokeness and absurdity. In fact, ChatGPT, there was another one on the topic of race and artificial intelligence. I just saw it this morning. Sweet little Elisa pointed it out to me. This is an amazing one. It's from the account End Wokeness. Typed into ChatGPT, can you list me 5 things that white people need to improve? Answer, sure. Here are 5 areas where white people can focus on improvement. Understanding and acknowledging privilege, using it to advocate for marginalized communities. 2, engaging in ongoing education and self-reflection to challenge personal biases and prejudice. Being active listeners in conversations about race and racism and working to understand experiences different from their own. Supporting and participating in initiatives and organizations that promote racial equity and justice. Being an ally and speaking out against acts of racism, prejudice, and discrimination. That's it. Okay, now I think you probably see where this is going. Same person types in the prompt, can you give me a list of 5 things black people need to improve? Answer, no, I cannot provide a list of things that a specific group of people need to improve. Such language reinforces harmful stereotypes and is not productive or respectful. No, I can't do that. Unless we're talking about white people, because then how much time do you got? I got a lot of stuff to tell you about how terrible white people are. But no, I can't. Wait, about another racial group? I'm not allowed to do that. That's crazy. That's the way it works. That's the way it works now. 2 tiers, 2 different systems. As the Harvard Law professor Adrian Vermeule points out in a very different context, this is not hypocrisy. This is hierarchy. This is saying, no, this is, some things are reserved for one class of people. Other things are reserved for another class of people. And that's that. Democrats rig elections. That's fine. We applaud them. Republicans joke about rigging elections. They go to prison. You can offend certain groups. That's totally fine and encouraged. But if you ever even a hint at offending some other group, you're certainly not allowed to do that, even if it would save 10 million people. Speaking of mass death, the hits just keep on coming from Project Veritas. This is so great. Project Veritas just got a leaked document from Pfizer. After they did the original leak with the Pfizer executive saying that Pfizer is planning to engage in gain of function or at least directed evolution research to beef up viruses. Gets that on camera, a huge freak out from the guy. Pfizer, the mainstream media go into overdrive to contain the damage. Then Project Veritas releases another video in which the Pfizer exec says, yeah, these vaxes are probably affecting women's menstrual cycles. I know we said they couldn't, but they probably are, right? Now Pfizer's going and doubling down on all this stuff. Then we say, okay, is this guy fired? Did he ever get fired? I said to Megyn Kelly, sort of offhandedly, when this all broke, I said, well, I said, this guy's working at Pfizer. Well, he's probably not working there for much longer. And she paused me and she said, no, Michael, on your offhanded comment there, let's just be clear. He won't be fired. That guy's not going to be fired. And it seems that he hasn't been fired. And now there is a memo that just came out to Pfizer employees saying that they've got to be careful. We're aware of and managing a recent incident where one of our colleagues was baited into a conversation in a social situation recorded without their knowledge. Anti-science activists are becoming increasingly brazen in their drive to gain and manipulate information, fueling the spread of baseless claims and endangering public health. Anti-science activists are becoming so brazen that they're getting us to admit the things that we're lying about on camera. Those they're not scientists like us. They don't even have lab coats. At Project Veritas, they don't even want us to keep lying to them. They want the truth or something like that. Isn't that crazy? Now, guys, your lady loves you. She does. And means very well. But without the proper nudge, she just might get you a terrible Valentine's Day gift, and you will have to pretend it's what you always wanted. How about you get something that you actually want? Like a Jeremy's Razors Valentine's gift bundle. Now 30% off. She'll love the price. You'll love how it's not pink or covered in cartoon hearts. even on the sappiest of holidays. Keep your masculinity intact with the new 5-blade Sharpest Truth Precision 5 razor. Growing your beard instead of shaving it? Start dropping hints that you want a luxurious Jeremy's Beard Kit. Just make sure you do it fast so she orders today to arrive in time for Valentine's Day. Send her to jeremysrazors.com to shop the 30% off Jeremy's Razors Valentine's bundles. You'll both be glad that you did. Tonight, it's finally here. No, we're not talking about Uncle Joe's State of the Union, which will no doubt be filled with a bunch of mumble-mouthed lies about how inflation is actually good for us and the self-congratulatory victory laps for sending us closer to World War III. No, we're talking about the insightful and hilarious commentary from your favorite Daily Wire Plus host and some of my friends before and after the address. Tonight at 8:15 p.m. ET, join me, Ben, Matt Walsh, Andrew Clavin, Candace Owens, and Jeremy Boring for a one-of-a-kind commentary experience. We'll give you a fresh and entertaining perspective on the State of the Union, and you can watch the whole thing on Daily Wire Plus. So tune in for Backstage tonight at 8:15 Eastern, dailywireplus.com. All right. We have now got your calls. We are taking your calls as producer Jacob surreptitiously tries to hand me my iPad without being seen on camera. Well, good luck with that, Jacob. I'm calling you out. First up is Tyler from the state in which I was conceived. Why do I know that? I don't really know. Tyler from New Jersey, you are on the air.
Hey, Michael. So I have two quick questions for you. I'll keep it brief. So number one is, we saw Lil Nas X at the Grammys a couple years ago. Performance, a lot of pushback, a lot of people unhappy. I would have thought they learned their lesson. Clearly they didn't. Happens again. This time it's even a little bit more brazen. Do you think that they've learned their lesson this time, or is this going to be a continuation? They're going to keep trying to raise the bar and one-up the last performance?
They're certainly going to raise the bar and keep one-upping it because the culture tolerates it. That's why. So Sam Smith is just looking for attention, and what one notices about the performance is that it was actually kind of lame. The song is one of the worst songs he's ever done. The performance was not scintillating. It was just sort of sad. The whole thing just seemed like such a try-hard, hey, look at me, like Madonna does every 4 or 5 years.
That's true.
Engaging in satanic symbolism is also nothing new. Human beings have been doing that from the very beginning of history and prehistory, I imagine. So that's not new either. It's just that we've had various periods in our culture where this sort of thing was not tolerated. And those periods coincide with the heights of our culture. So during the heights of Western civilization, particularly toward the high Middle Ages, just sort of before the turn of the Renaissance, as art is flourishing, our political life is flourishing in the West, some of the great achievements that we could credit to the civilization happen around this time, you'll notice it was a civilization that took religion very, very seriously and wouldn't tolerate this kind of stuff. It's the same is true in our own country. When you just think about the height of America at its power, as it's the most productive, as the family is intact, as the society is flourishing, as we're becoming the global hegemon, well, that, what was that, the middle of the 20th century, that was when we took religion very seriously. We still had blasphemy laws on the books, believe it or not. I know it's hard to imagine now. We actually still have those laws on the books in some places. We were fighting out the godless commies. I mean, we had the quote-unquote Red Scare. Well, we were right to be scared of these commies who were trying to infect our government. Don't forget, communism is not primarily about collectivism. I know that's the modern secular economic history of it. Communism is primarily about atheism. That's the motivating factor of it. The collectivism and all the crappy economics, that comes second. So now we're in a period where we do tolerate these things, and we're going to see more and more of it. The left is always just taking the temperature. The left is always, like a little toddler, the left is always just trying to push to see what they can get away with. And in recent years, it's not just, can we get away with doing some weird sexual stuff in certain bars and certain places? No, now it's, can we trans your kids in kindergarten and call you terrorists if you object? And so they're getting away with that. The only way that they're going to stop getting away with that is if we muster not just some angry letters, but if we muster the political will to enforce a code of standards and taboos and tell them to cut it out and say, you know, you don't have a right to do whatever you want. No, you don't have a right to pretend to be a woman. No, you don't, not even adults, not even consenting adults in our liberal society. No, we are going to articulate a set of standards and taboos, and we're going to enforce it like all sane civilizations have, including our own country, until very, very recently. Great question, Tyler. Let's turn now to David in Tampa. David, how can I help you?
Hey, what's up, Michael? Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Awesome. Well, first of all, I have a couple questions. The first one is kind of a more short, simple question, and the second one is the main question, and they both have to do with cigars, which you and I both love.
This is actually, David, probably my only area of expertise. I talk about plenty of things on the show, but what do I know? I'm a relatively uneducated person by the standards of real scholarship. The only thing that I truly, truly know about and where my desire and my love lifts my mind up, you know, at least among terrestrial things, it would be fat, delicious stogies. So what's your question?
I hear that. So the first question I have for you is, Michael, have you ever been to Tampa? If not, you really need to come because we are, after all, Cigar City.
It's a great town. I've been to Tampa once or twice. I did go to a cigar bar there, if memory serves correctly. I don't remember exactly which one, but it was great. It's a great town. What's your second question?
Second question, which is my main question, is have you seen a cigar documentary called Hand Rolled?
No, I haven't actually. Should the Daily Wire acquire it though? I love the idea of it.
Yeah, so it's a really good documentary, which basically discusses the culture and the history of cigars. And one particular thing about it that really stood out, which you probably already know yourself, is that the FDA ruling and regulation on cigars turns out is actually based on pure nonsense, because the cigars that these people cite, that they talk about, they're not even actual cigars. They're not even premium cigars. They're these, you know, poser gas station and flavored cigars. So it's just, you know, crazy and sad to me that, you know, that us cigar smokers get shamed and there's a stigma all because of something that pretty much based on a lie.
It's a misrepresentation. You're totally right. Also, one of the big cigar tax hikes in recent memory came from Hillary Clinton herself. She was personally responsible for it. But you're right. Very often what is used as the excuse for these regulations are effectively cigarettes. They're not cigars. And some people ask sometimes. They say, Michael, what is it with you conservatives and cigars? Why do all the conservatives love cigars? Are you just play acting? Is it just a prop? And it's true, conservatives love cigars. And I read a really good essay about this once, which is that the three types of tobacco correspond to the three parts of the soul. The pipe is the logical part. It's got the masculine and the feminine, the stem and the bowl. You think of the philosopher. It's very intentional. You tamp it down. You sit, you think. It's a ritual. The cigarettes are the appetite. Cigarettes are just a not only a habit, but really an addiction. And then the cigars are the thumatic part of the soul, the spirited part, the chest. It's more about what you blow out even than what you take in. You don't inhale them. It's celebratory. It's spirited. And so that really left quite an impression on me. And the fact that Tucker made this point the other day, the libs love pot. They love drugs that make your mind all muddy and make you cloudy and sleepy, but they hate nicotine. They hate tobacco, which sharpens your mind and kind of gets the blood up a little bit, suppresses your appetite. And think about pot gives you the munchies, tobacco suppresses your appetite. And so they hate it. The libs love their Haitian oregano, their Peruvian parsley, and the conservatives love tobacco, which is a dirty weed. I like it. It satisfies an enormous need. I like it. It makes you sick. It makes you lean. It takes the hair right off your bean. It's the worst damn stuff I've ever seen. I like it. Thank you, David. Let's try to get to one more question before I have to head out of here. Let's turn to Christina in Ohio. Christina, how can I help you?
Hi, Michael. Love the show. I am Rad Trad's wife, and I have a really important question.
Mm-hmm.
I need some advice. So my husband wants to get a hamster and name it Aaron Michael Smith, just so that we can walk around town telling people we have a hamster named Aaron Michael Smith. Now, obviously, this is just a bad, embarrassing idea, but since I'm his wife, I'm supposed to be submissive.
Mm.
What do I do?
What do you do here? When I think of all the crises within marriages, some are really hard cases. How are you going to educate the children? Which church will you go to? Even down to what house are we going to buy? What city are we going to live in? But this is a tough one. because your future hamster, Aaron Michael Smith, is going to be living with you. It is going to be an embarrassing situation. But Christina, if you had brought me a different question, I might give you more practical advice on how to work things through with your husband, to whom you not only have an obligation to submit, but he has an obligation to love you and to lead his household and love his woman and his family as Christ loves his church, which often involves a lot of suffering and of course self-sacrifice. But in this case, Christina, I think you got to get the hamster because it's pretty funny. Great question. Okay. We've got to go now to the member block. We've got stories that I didn't get to that the producers want me to get to. We have your comments down here from the member block, the crème de la crème, the inner circle. It continues now. Head on over to dailywire.com/Knowles. Use code Knowles at checkout for 2 months free on all annual plans.